Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And we're going to talk about healing addictions, our addictions. We all have addictions, one sort or another. It's the way we are conditioned and try to manage our lives, holding on to things that perhaps aren't that good for us. And to help us in the show to talk about healing addictions is, again, our guests who are the authors of the book It Went Without Saying, and that's John Joyce and Jamie Chupka, who worked with their own addictions, healing their own addictions, and are now helping others. Hello, Chupka family.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good. Thanks for being on the show today. This is, we've done a bunch of shows about addiction and talked about how it can be recognized and managed or not managed. And finally, there are ways that we need to remove ourselves from addictions and completely, if we can, and live free. And you guys have done that, right?
It's a process. I'm certainly not addiction-free.
I'm putting you on the spot. I don't mean all your addictions. I mean the big ones that were seemingly disastrous to you.
Yes.
Well, yeah, I guess you could say active addiction. Because if you look at say a chemical addiction from a 12-step view, you know, addiction it can be treated and not really cured, but there are many ways to treat it so that you are free from active addiction.
Right. It might be
sitting
somewhere latent, but as long as you're in charge, you can handle it.
Right. Exactly.
Don't you think we have a lot of latent addictions or even active addictions in all of us that haven't been named yet?
Probably, but I think they probably ultimately all have the same name, and that is that something outside of us can make us whole, that there is something inside of us that either isn't enough or isn't worthy. So the release from a substance or working too hard, you know, or any of those things is, in my mind, all about proving to actually it is yourself that you are worthy.
Or maybe it's something that just takes up time and energy that allows you to live in denial of self. Or of any lack of wholeness. So it's not that you feel whole because of an addiction so much as it's something that allows you to stay in denial.
Right, you seek to feel whole, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right, that you think that there's a search to find the wholeness of yourself.
So, well, let's say we're addicted to video games.
Mm-hmm.
Or we're addicted, you know, to some kinds, you know, there are all kinds of things that people can be addicted to that might not feel so good at the time. Well, they might feel video games, but, or even those I forget what they're called, but where you play with numbers on a grid.
Oh, Sudoku.
Yeah.
Oh,
yes. Yeah, there are people addicted to that. And does that make them feel whole? Or is that just a way of avoiding life?
Sometimes I think like video games are a way for some people to be in the moment. You know, it's like motorcycle riding. It requires your total attention, and in that space, you are really there, free from maybe the noise of your mind or the uncomfortableness that you may be feeling or the underlying anxiety or the underlying depression. You know, so it becomes like a substitute to get out of Dodge or that uncomfortability to move into this other space. And it can be misplaced when it becomes an addiction. You know, anything that may be fun for a little bit is fine, but when it becomes something that takes you over, you know, then it becomes very problematic.
But I guess you could say the same thing about Sudoku or about playing solitaire on the computer. You're in the moment with it, but you're avoiding so much of life.
Go ahead, Jay.
Well, I think, too, I think there are phases of addiction. You know, it's kind of like the, you know, stages. You know, first you're denying it. You don't realize that you are, and it's not conscious that you're seeking something outside of yourself to meet. It does appear fun. Drinking was fun for me for a while until I lost the ability to control my drinking.
All right, and then we get to a place in addiction where we're losing life.
Right.
And then there's a lot of course, and your book is all about that, and your life has been about identifying those and rescuing yourselves from that.
Mm-hmm.
And that we've had shows about that and how difficult that is in itself and what a process, because there's so many blockages to truth.
Absolutely.
And so then you get to a point where you feel like you're making progress. And how comfortable is that or not?
Jamie, do you want to speak to that?
Sure. You feel like you're making progress in what way?
In other words, you seem to be, you know, holding the tail of the tiger. But it's still this tiger.
like you have it under control. Is that what you mean?
Or you're in the process of beginning to have it under control.
So the first steps of recovery, when you stop drinking or using?
Yeah, when you stop. In other words, you think you've got it under control and you stop. What happens in life when we actually change, when we're living in a different truth, but we haven't quite, we're not quite in command of it yet?
The first steps of that, I think are different for everyone.
Okay.
Because it really would depend on what you're addicted to. I think, for me, my experience, which is really, you know, what I can speak on, my brain was very chaotic. Because I had gone to a level of despair. And I think that, you know, I have a friend who says, you know, well, and for me, I had to want to live a little bit more than I wanted to die. And then my friend always says, you have to not want to use just 51% of the time. And so it's baby steps. That's how I started, with baby steps. Baby steps of belief. Baby steps from despair to hope.
It might be very scary to start taking responsibility for yourself.
Absolutely. And I think it takes a long time to fully take responsibility for yourself and for your actions. Again, it's like they say in the program, they'll say it's peeling away the layers of the onion to get to the bottom, to get to who you are inside.
I think, and I do, I think all of us are afraid to look at that. And, you know, when we finally do, we realize how beautiful we are in this connection to the source of our being. But the process backwards is what's so fearful, I think, for many, many people, is because we have within us this shame that we carry from mistakes we made when we were kids or whatever those issues are for each individual person. And that's what we're afraid to look at. But that's really, you know, where it all begins, is accepting that part of us that we didn't like or that we were trying to escape. That's
right,
an important...
I'm sorry, Mom.
Oh, go ahead, Jane.
If you look at addiction from purely a physiological view, you're looking at your body, you're looking at putting a substance into your body that your body's not used to. So at first, your body is in shock, thinking, what is this in my body? Then your cells of your body and your body adjust to the substance. And it's much easier to slow down something that you just started than it is to stop something that's already been started and activated in your body. So it takes the body, after you stop the substance, and it doesn't matter what it is, whether it's caffeine, nicotine, alcohol, drugs, it doesn't matter what it is. If we could stop the substance for a period as short as 3 days, our bodies and the cells of our body will realign itself. That doesn't mean that the brain is back to functioning and your emotional and spiritual body have realigned, but the physiological body has. And if you're talking about something like a benzodiazepine or alcohol, particularly something like heroin, now those, if you look even at it, the 3 days, people are in detox here for 3 days.
Now, we're talking about substance abuse at that level, and that level is fairly understandable that those are substances that end up dominating your body, and you have to beat the substance first and then attack the psyche.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then there are other substances too that, for instance, sweets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, candy, mm-hmm. or other kinds of foods that people are addicted to that aren't that the body then gets used to and can't do without.
Mm-hmm.
Starches,
right?
All kinds of things.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And, but an overconsumption of any of those, it's the same thing.
Right.
And now, if you're food is a little trickier, but
But it's still something that the body has to cleanse itself and change its own intelligence about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, otherwise it keeps craving it and you can't avoid it.
And if you look at it, really, it's life I was craving.
Right.
Life.
Right. And somehow, you know, the alcohol was a substitute for life. And then in the end, because it owned you,
that's right.
Your survival needed to keep on seeking it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's probably true for a lot of these substances, including carbohydrates. And
mm-hmm.
you know, it's we get used to it in a way that the body is used to it, and the body then runs us.
Right. I mean, it's as simple as a nasal spray. When people, have allergies, they begin to use a nasal spray so they can breathe. But then the lining of the nasal, of the nose begins to depend upon that spray.
Right.
So.
Well, it's interesting how we choose substances that then we don't have any choice left. You know, we give the choice away, so we're no longer responsible.
Right.
Right. It's such a dichotomy. It really is, because you're For me, I'm getting involved in something that initially I thought was going to enhance my life. I liked drinking because it really lowered my inhibitions. And I thought, wow, this is kind of nice. I can be someone that I'm not. You know, thinking on some, although I was an adolescent, so it was a little bit of immature thinking that I was going to, my life would enhance. However, once the addiction progressed, I began to take, as you said, my choices away, and my choice, the alcohol made my choices for me, and that became my life, because I didn't have the choice.
It's also like prostitutes with a pimp.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And they think at first maybe they can make some money or whatever, and then in the end, they're owned
by
somebody.
They turn their life over to...
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure, it's the money that they're looking at to enhance their life.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a bigger ruler, and so with all of these, you know, chemistry is the bigger ruler, or somebody dominating them might be the bigger ruler.
Mm-hmm.
I guess there's a lot of relationships like that, just marriages that we think that, you know, people are getting into relationships that save them in a marriage, and in the end it ends up dominating and diminishing them.
That's the part two now. You know, when you clear up at least the physical or the physiological component of any kind of an addiction, you know, if it's a chemical or food addiction, then you really got to take a look at the belief systems that are operating within the psyche. You know, like for instance, one could be addicted to helping people. All right, and my only definition of myself, giving myself any worthwhile in my life, is if I am assistance to others. Therefore, unconsciously, I need to create a whole system of people who need me so that I can justify my existence on this planet. And unknowingly, then, we contribute to the very thing that we're trying to do away with. And that belief system has a lot to do with I am only worthwhile if I can contribute something to, which stems from either your early family childhood or if you believe in your past lives or whatever. All those things need to be taking a look at, which then requires one to move into a state of consciousness where one can examine the belief systems under which we're operating and not get attached to them, not see them as truth, because most of the time we're operating on those belief systems without even examining whether or not they have any truth to them or not.
Well, that gets into very, very deep places of conditioning that could happen even at conception or...
Absolutely.
Apparently.
I bring them up because that's a whole other layer of healing. Mm-hmm. You know, that we were speaking about, because that is a deeper underpinning level of healing that needs to occur.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
At some point.
It's a long journey.
It's profound and lasting, but it's a long journey.
Yeah, and one way, of course, is to look back and look at your parents. There's something called Project Purpose, which is labeled by Total Biology, which looks at the underlying psycho-emotional causes of all diseases. And Project Purpose is what was the purpose of the project of making you, of your parents when they were making love and they were conceiving you? What did they think that they were creating? Somebody who would take care of them? Something, you know, whatever was on their mind. Actually, that gets put into the mix, and when you're born, you actually are holding that purpose, and so if people look back, I mean, that I've done shows on that, and that can really distort your sense of reality and what you're here
mm-hmm.
for.
Right. And right, because so, you do come in with that memory.
But yeah, it's not even a memory so much because it was just at conception, but it's imbued into your genes.
It's a directive.
Exactly. You know, and it's amazing the different purposes parents have.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, and it certainly affects entire cultures if you look at it that way.
Yes. Well, it depends on how the culture designates its children. And
right.
Sure.
Right.
So it goes back to, you know, there's so many conditioning factors that we have that are all part of the unfolding of our, our conditioning and addictions that we have to get a handle on.
Right.
You know, we have to learn to believe in ourselves outside of the conditioning, and it's very hard to do that. There aren't too many methods out there, short of, you know, long therapy or, you know, who knows what it takes to get to the heart of the matter. It's something actually I deal with in my practice as an intuitive, where I go intuitively, I can go back into those places
mm-hmm.
in the womb, in early childhood, even at conception, and see the stories that were going on.
Right.
And mm-hmm. You know, there was a time in my practice where I noticed that about 10% of my clients were therapists. they were all looking for those clues that they couldn't find on their own. And,
yeah.
And so there's a way that we, you know, there are many ways that we need to uncover these hidden programs that keep us from allowing ourselves to be whole.
And, right.
And so you guys have certainly been embedded in that journey.
And it's interesting, at least as a family, because in that journey, I think each of the three of us have come about this process from a very different perspective. You know, and when we talk about it, like as we're talking about it now, it adds so much richness to the journey that your show in terms of energy still is so symbolic of how this mix can really work if we are open to really listening and hearing other people's journey to coming back into their own consciousness. And it, you know, it's wonderful. Like when Jamie talks about what goes on in the meetings and what people say and what that means to her, that's just a wonderful spice. And Joyce is very relational and communicative in terms of her journey. You know, and I go inside more. You know, so between the three of us, after we struggle with how we're going to communicate about it, you know, which takes a little while to kind of find out how to do that, what we get out of it is a tremendous resource for each other.
Well, it's interesting that you're talking about you and Joyce and the difference between you. You know, because Joyce, you're an in-your-face person, right?
Well, I guess you could say that.
Right.
She would prefer to say she's relational.
Well, I'm an in-your-face person, too, I think. So
yes.
I can understand that.
Let's get right down to it.
I respect that. It has its purposes in life.
But I think that what John is touching on, and it's true, the wonderful name for your show, this energy stew, is that we live on the earth to create, to become more. We are co-creators of the universe. And as in the analogy of a stew, we each bring an ingredient to make the world more. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's always, you know, perfect, because some of the herbs that we put into a stew are bitter, and that's okay. So it's in the fear of experiencing that we turn to other things, I think. And so, and
well,
that's
we have to people. Excuse me, but we just have to turn to a solution that are caused by it. You know, so Joyce, you and I, when we are more on the attack, people then have to defend themselves
yeah.
and figure out how to deal with that, and that stirs the pot, and that helps people. And John, you're the opposite, where if you're withholding, you know, when you're sitting back and more of the observer, then you attract people to need to pull out their energy to reach you.
Yeah.
So, so the two of you have a very opposite effect on people.
Yes.
And it's interesting that you work together, and you know, as a couple, and it's and Jamie, you could probably talk about those differences and what they mean.
I do in the book. I do.
Okay.
Absolutely. And
go ahead.
It's very, yeah, the relationship between the two of them and how that kind of, you know, how it affected me and how it affected the family life and the, you know, I guess, the relationship between the three of us, because as you stated before, addiction is a family disease. It sure is. It plays a role. Each of their relationships, now I'm not saying that either of them contributed at all to my addiction, but someone said to me that when you get into recovery, first you recover from your own disease and then you recover from your family's disease.
Aha. Uh-huh. So
yeah, sure. Right.
That's the hardest thing to identify, I'm sure, because we want to love our family. And I mean, certainly, well, what I've found is that usually in a family, there are certain people you are defensive with or about. I mean, certain, you know, the more aggressive parents you need to defend, and then the more passive parents you need to protect.
Mm-hmm.
And then you try to figure out, you know, where you can find the deepest love. And often I find that the parent who is the most passive or giving, let's say, or the one who gives in and allows the more aggressive member to carry on, that passive is more of a conditioning effect on the child than the more aggressive parent, because that confuses the child to understand. And if this is, you know, this is because I'm trying to protect my weaker parent, not that I'm saying that you guys fit these roles, but I'm talking about aggressive and weak, not necessarily, you know, strong and quiet. But this is a different where one parent is much weaker, and the dominant parent dominates everybody, and then the child is trying to protect the weaker parent. And in doing so, you know, feels that that's where the greatest love is, and that's the greatest support, and then that's who they identify the most with. But that's weakness. So they're identifying with weakness, and the two together try to war up against the strong parent, but they're always defeated.
Mm.
So that's hard to overcome.
And even in that pattern that you're talking about, one may appear to be weaker, another stronger, but in that sense of aggressive and passive, there's still both sets of weakness. You know, the aggressive one is still coming from a place of fear, as well as the one who appears to be more passive.
Sure.
You know? So
sure.
Part of that whole healing and that communication process is understanding how each, let's say for Joyce and I, we had to learn, okay, where did our communication styles come from in terms of our own family, and how can we begin to do that differently now so that we don't need to play either one of those roles? And, you know, we learn, and then we think we have it, and then next thing you know, you're back into it again. So it requires a certain amount of attention to really paying attention to your intention in the communication process.
Yeah, and I think what Joyce said, it's so important to have compassion and understanding on all sides of the issue that everybody is insecure.
Yes.
And,
yes.
And to understand that people who are asserting themselves so strongly are making up for their own sense of lack.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And fear. And you know, desire to protect. So and in many ways that's I think the cause of aggression is a desire to protect the community, the original warriors. So it goes back to a very primal point in time.
Yeah, and warriors are operating out of fear.
Of course.
So
of course.
So if we can always keep on looking to interpret situations from that place of compassion, then that can lead to forgiveness.
Right.
But I don't think we can forgive until we can be compassionate.
And the compassion is for yourself. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You must begin with compassion for yourself.
Right. You can't, I agree, you can't forgive anybody else until you can forgive yourself.
Right.
And that's the hardest part, especially for someone who's codependent. Because if you're codependent, it's much easier to forgive other people.
Yeah.
Or being an addict, you know, it's okay, I forgive you, but I don't forgive myself.
Right.
Because I feel like I did this to you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, I take on the responsibility for what I've done to you, even though that's probably not true.
Uh huh. Well, we're all responsible on all levels, and so it has to start at home, Jamie, I guess to be able to write this book with your parents and to live the life you're living and be responsible, how much is it in your life every day to keep on needing to forgive and to take responsibility?
How much is in my life? It's got to be 100%. It's work. Work. I'm not saying that I wake up and I'm, you know, this healed whole person, but it starts with the forgiving of myself. And for me, that means needing attendance, meditation, exercise, the balance.
So there's a lifestyle here of healing that we're talking about, and perhaps we can do a future show on how to live a healing lifestyle. Mm. How's that sound?
That's great.
All right.
That's refreshing.
Yeah. I really
we'll
love how you
that.
Build these, you know.
Well, you guys are great guests, and we're running close to the end of the show here, so I want to thank you so much. And It Went Without Saying is the name of your book, and I guess itwentwithoutsaying.com, is that it?
Yes.
Okay.
You can buy the book by going to itwentwithoutsaying.com.
Uh-huh. And they can find you that way, too.
And they can find us that way.
Okay. So, John Joyce and Jamie Chupka, thank you so much again for being guests on Energy Stew at Progressive Radio Network.
Peter, thank you.
Sure. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew. I can be reached at Heart River, HEART, river.org. And thank you so much for listening today.